Fascinating discussion with Uri Geller, but it continues. Up next, Mitch Horowitz, as we talk about the Miracle Club and how thoughts become reality. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mitch Horowitz with us, one of today's most widely known voices of spirituality. Mitch is also an award-winning historian, longtime friend of Coast to Coast AM, of course. And Mitch is a very popular voice of audiobooks as well. His latest, The Miracle Club. Mitch, welcome back.
So much, George. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure, my friend. What you been up to these days?
Well, today is the launch day of The Miracle Club, which is very exciting for me because it's probably the first book I've written that is strictly practical, that goes into techniques and methods. And it's a big bridge that I've crossed with this book, and I'm very grateful to have the chance to talk to the Coast family about it.
It's a great title, too, by the way, The Miracle Club. It sounds like a movie already.
You know, it was a group of occult explorers here in New York City in the 19th century, and they were dedicated to exploring everything, just like you do on your show, and I really wanted to revive the spirit of that original group. Their motto was try. That's it, just one word, try. And that's really been my informal motto throughout my whole life, so I use the term in tribute to them.
How many members of that club?
There was probably about five of them. They were just a little group on the west side of Manhattan in 1875.
Wow.
They were experimenting with seances and mediumship and talking to the dead and table rapping and so on. They weren't around for very long, but they formed the nucleus of a much larger and more influential group, the Theosophical Society, which is still around today and which is probably responsible for the whole revolution in alternative spirituality.
That is amazing, too, because during that era, the 1800s, it seems like the dabbling in the paranormal was different than today, Mitch. And they really took it seriously, didn't they?
Very seriously. And they had this spirit of childlike wonder. I mean, they were delving into mysterious things, and they were looking into some dark places. But they were doing it with this sense of just asking themselves, what is out there? How can we understand life? You know, it was a period of time when Darwinism was in the ascendance and people were starting to think maybe we've been wrong about God and spirits and the invisible world. And these people said, listen, we don't want to throw science out. We embrace science, but we want to use science to try to experiment with whether we can detect things about the invisible world. Thomas Edison, believe it or not, was a member of this original group, and he talked about wanting to construct a machine that could help people talk to the dead. It's not clear whether Edison ultimately did that, but he and Major General Abner Doubleday were both early members.
That's amazing. Now, tell us a little bit about the book, The Miracle Club, and because it's also a practical guidebook, isn't it?
It really is. You know, for many years, I've written and I've been on the show talking about alternative spiritual history, the history of the occult, but I've always also considered myself a believing historian. I experiment with the ideas and the methods and approaches that I write about, and I wanted to take the opportunity to write about the things that I've tried myself. I believe very strongly in the powers of the mind. I believe that thoughts are causative. I believe that if you walk around with a deeply held, emotionally charged mental picture that is going to affect what happens to you, and you can use that, and there are reasons for this, and I wanted to write a book that would give people concrete hands-on methods.
What do you think a miracle is, Mitch?
A miracle, very simply put, is something that is a radical departure from all natural expectation, an occurrence that breaks away from everything that you could naturally and reasonably expect to arise from circumstances. And I've experienced miracles in my own life. The very fact that you and I are talking, you know, I didn't start writing my own books until I was into middle age. I am currently 52 years old, and my career did not take off until I was in my 40s. And that didn't happen by accident. There was a mental picturing. There was a visualization.
Mm-hmm.
There was an affirmation, as well as a lot of sweat equity. But I do believe if you can define a miracle as a radical departure from circumstance, miracles do occur today.
Hence the subtitle of the book, which is How Thoughts Become Reality. And you're a very strong believer in that, aren't you?
I really am. And, you know, it's funny. If you actually take a look at your life, sometimes there is a long interval. Sometimes there is a long gestation period between a thought and the event. But if listeners really sit back and survey their lives, they will find an uncanny congruency between things that they've thought about and things that have happened to them.
Mitch, have you found that people who dabble with the dark side tend to do some of the similar things that positive people do, but that something always goes awry for them?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, we face these ethical questions of how to use our powers all the time in life. You know, a person could be completely materialist. He or she could be an atheist, and they still face ethical questions every single day about whether they're treating other people fairly and honorably. If you take seriously, as I do, that our minds have these extra physical capacities, that responsibility becomes all the more. That responsibility becomes that much stronger. My contention is that however we may feel buffeted by the winds and the currents of life, we are much more powerful than we think we are. We have a hand in events mentally, and often this shows up in ways that we don't suspect. So my message is also, be careful, because what you're thinking about absolutely has a practical dimension on your life and on the lives of others.
I had Uri Geller on before you came on, and he was in Israel, and of course, great mentalist. And he was telling us a story at how he was commissioned to help the Brits in a soccer match against Scotland, and over the stadium, they put him in a helicopter, and he was supposed to influence the ball. And I guess when the Scottish kicker was going for the ball, Uri mentally moved it. And the guy missed it or something like that.
No kidding. Now, here's a story about Uri. He's an old family friend, and he was over at the household of my brother-in-law, Ivan's, when Ivan was 15 years old. And Ivan expressed all kinds of skepticism, and Uri said to him, "Do me a favor, Ivan, go into your bedroom and draw a picture." And so Ivan went in his bedroom, drew a picture, came out, and Uri said, "You drew a house." And Ivan was shocked and said, "That's absolutely what he drew."
I know Edgar Mitchell, the late astronaut, when he was on our program, was talking about a tie clasp episode. He had a NASA tie clasp, and tie pin, and he lost it. He couldn't find it, and he was telling Uri about it. And out of the sky, just out of nowhere, they heard a ping, and it was the tie clasp that fell on the ground and came out of nowhere. The other part of it, the part that clasps into the pointed end of it,
yeah,
was in Uri's ice cream. He almost swallowed it. I mean, it's amazing, these abilities.
I've been there for that.
Just amazing. But back to these miracles, and when we take calls next hour, I'd like for people to share miracle stories with you, Mitch, if we can. But back to the dark side of it, and I don't want to dabble on the dark end too much.
Sure.
But
no, happy to.
But, you know, people dabble in the dark side. They curse other people. They put hexes on other people. And in a lot of cases, those things happen to these people.
Yeah.
How come then the dark side has that kind of power?
Well, it represents something that's in us. You know, we are beings of a broad spectrum. And my contention is that thoughts are causative. And whether you are using your thoughts through a spell, or whether you're using your thoughts through a ritual, or whether you are projecting thoughts at other people, something's going to happen. There is going to be some effect. However, one of my favorite teachers, Neville Goddard, a great teacher in the mind power tradition, teaches that the only way that you can project a negative spell or thought onto another person is if that person could wish the same thing for someone else, is if that person could wish the same thing for someone else. If he or she could not, it rebounds to you. So in a certain sense, what we grew up calling the golden rule is protection against evil forces. And I want people to listen to that very carefully, because we are apt to overlook familiar things. We are apt to overlook simple things. If you are concerned about negative forces in your life, the golden rule can serve as an enormous source of protection. There's an esoteric and occult dimension to the golden rule that we don't always appreciate.
Well, that's absolutely true. Now, why do our thoughts shape the reality of what happens?
This is my contention in the book, and I felt I really had to put myself out there and come up with a theory of positive thinking. I'm going to be very brief about it. Across all kinds of sciences, from psychical research to quantum theorizing, we have made the determination over the past 80 years that time is not what we think it is. Linear time is basically a very powerful illusion that we use to organize our lives, and it's a necessary illusion. But if it's an illusion, it means that we are selecting events all the time from across an infinitude of possibilities. So I don't use the term manifest. I use the term select. And you can select events under the right circumstances with an exquisitely focused and emotively charged thought. And that's what's going on. We are selecting in the same way that when you take a measurement in the particle lab, your very decision to take that measurement will affect what you experience. The same is true in outer life.
Can you use these powers to affect your health?
Without question. And I have to emphasize that we live under lots of laws and forces. One of them is the law of physical decline. One of them is the law of mortality. There's never been an exception to that. But one must never feel that you're without devices, that you're without tools. In the book, I write about extraordinary cases of spontaneous remission of diseases, which doesn't mean that's going to happen to people all the time. I would never extend false hope. But the cases are there, the occurrences are there, and we have to probe and look at these things. Very often they correlate with intensive meditation. People who have meditated 3 hours a day have recorded instances in the medical literature of remission of diseases. Not all the time, but it has occurred.
You say that when you were writing the book, something weird happened with the rock band, the Monkees.
Oh, it was a trip, George. Talk about us all being loose in time. A couple of summers ago, I was getting into the music of the Monkees, just completely out of the blue. And my wife thought I was going nuts. My kids were memorizing their lyrics.
I would think you were going nuts.
Yes, you would think that. No one could imagine.
But they did have a few good songs.
They really did. They had some beautiful pop songs. And I was playing them all the time. I was getting into them. Everybody thought I was going crazy. I couldn't figure out why I was getting into the Monkees. George, it was months and months later that I got a call from an editor at the Washington Post who said to me, "Do you know Mike Nesmith, who was one of the members of the Monkees?" I said, "No." He said, "Did you know Nesmith just wrote a memoir?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Did you know he was a Christian Scientist, which is a healing and mentally based a form of spirituality?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, we'd like you to review Nesmith's memoir for the Washington Post. Are you interested?" And I said, "Of course I'm interested." And I told him this story of how months before, without any forethought about any of this, I started getting into the Monkees. And I actually put this into the review, and the Washington Post, to its credit, included this material. It was just the weirdest thing, that it was almost like retrocausality in a way, or as if I was loosed from linear time. This is why I'm saying that time is not what we think it is. I was completely prepared for that opportunity because for reasons that no one could understand, I was getting into the Monkees. But the reason seemed to be off in the future, so to speak. But my contention is it wasn't the future. It's that everything is happening all around us at once, which is why mental focus is so effective.
I was 16 when the Monkees started playing.
Oh, was that right?
Long, long time ago. And if I remember, one of the members was Mickey Dolenz.
That's right.
Who played Circus Boy on television, right?
That's right. And still touring.
They're still going. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's
I love him.
Do you know the name Joseph Gallenberger by any chance?
I don't.
Joseph wrote a couple books, one called Liquid Luck.
Oh, of course.
All right.
Yes, I know the book. I know
okay.
the book.
Okay. He would conduct experiments, still does, in Las Vegas with groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to prove that positive thinking and the mind has a lot to do with influencing things that happen.
That's right.
And he is totally convinced, and he's convinced me too, that if you go into a situation like Las Vegas, upbeat, and, you know, just, you know, positive about things, the odds are really high you're going to win.
Yes. And you know what's so fascinating about that is that outlook has been validated by serious ESP research. My hero, J.B. Ryan, pioneered scholarly ESP research at Duke University in the early 1930s. J.B. is now deceased. And one of the things that J.B. found, and he just buried this in the footnote of a book, but it's monumental, that when his subjects in the ESP lab, and these were people tested under very rigorous conditions, when they had a feeling of hopeful expectancy, when they were upbeat, when they were enthusiastic, when they were positive, their scores spiked. When they were bored, when they were downcast, when they were fatigued, their scores dipped. And it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. This dip and spike followed mood. It's the same thing that he says in the book.
If you go into a situation, any kind of situation, doesn't have to be Las Vegas, down in, you know, putting that black cloud over your head for whatever reason,
yes,
it's not going to happen for you.
It's not going to happen. And the thing that I always tell people is, and again, this is one of these familiar things, but listen very carefully to it. You must really want it. You must really want it. If you're a person whose attitude is neither here nor there about winning in Vegas or the lottery or money or whatever, it's not going to work. It has to be something that you really want, which is why it's so important to maturely identify your most heartfelt desires. There's real power there because the power comes from an emotionally charged thought.
We're talking with Mitch Horowitz. His latest book is called The Miracle Club. As a matter of fact, we're going to tell you how you can get a membership into The Miracle Club a little bit later on in the program. His website is his name, all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's amazing. How did you decide to write this kind of a book?
You know, it was funny. I had written a history of the positive mind movement a couple of years ago called One Simple Idea, and I began to realize every chapter that I wrote, every person who I talked about in the book, I was using their methods. I was road testing these things myself. And I thought to myself, look, if I'm experimenting with these methods myself, and if that's what's driving my historical research, why don't I write about the methods? Why don't I write about the steps? Why don't I write about the techniques? And it was a big step because a lot of historians are afraid to unmask themselves as believers in what they write about. But I've never been afraid to do that. And I just really wanted to share with readers the actual hands-on things I do in my own life.
How powerful is our human mind, Mitch?
It is powerful in ways that our generation is only coming to understand. Look, we are realizing that things work out there like placebo surgery. We are realizing that people can lose weight, literally, George, and lower their blood pressure just based on the thoughts that they carry with them. Things that we would have thought were unbelievable a generation ago are being validated in clinical experiments today. I think this universe is ultimately mental. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. that we don't live under many laws and forces, but if one can understand how much that means, your thoughts are more powerful than anything you've been brought up to realize.
Is it the power of the brain, or are we dealing with something outside of the physical body?
We're dealing with something outside of the physical body, and I think we can say that conclusively today because we have actual experiments that the thoughts change the brain. Your sustained thoughts will actually alter the neural pathways, the electrical pathways in your brain. That's demonstrable by brain scans. It's literally mind over matter. So if thought changes the brain, then thought has to be something that's extra physical that goes beyond the brain.
Like we're human beings, sometimes things work, sometimes they don't.
That's
correct. If they don't work, what does that mean?
You know, it's very important that's an extremely important point because people will sometimes try a method, it works, they're thrilled, they try it again, it doesn't work, and then they feel dejected. One of the things that I write about in the book is that we live within a cosmic framework where we experience many different laws and forces. The law of mind is constant, as a law must be, but so is the law of gravity. But you're going to experience gravity differently on Earth than you would on the moon or on Jupiter. It doesn't mean gravity isn't there. It doesn't mean gravity isn't operative, but it's affected by mass. The mind is the same way. Circumstances are going to intrude upon how we experience these things. So it's important that we experiment very clearly and very carefully.
Mitch, we're going to come back and talk more about your work, The Miracle Club. Next hour, we'll take phone calls, questions, and miracle stories. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Mitch Horowitz, as we talk about his latest book, which is called The Miracle Club, How Thoughts Become Reality. We'll take your calls and your stories next hour as well. How does ESP fit into this, Mitch? You were talking about it briefly, but I tend to think there's a very deep-rooted tie-in here.
Yeah, oh, there is without question. You know, we've experienced in this country about 80 years of serious psychical research, serious experiments into ESP, precognition, telepathy. And, George, the evidence is simply overwhelming. And what we're seeing in the ESP lab is that the mind possesses extra physical qualities. There are ways that we receive and get and give information that go beyond the five senses. once we've come to grips with the fact that the mind is extra-physical, that the mind has an existence outside the sensate body, it opens the door to all kinds of possibilities. We realize we are not just material beings, and it helps confirm to us that our thoughts make a difference in the world. We may be like sending and receiving stations. We're always looking for people to help us with projects, to give us a hand, to meet us halfway. And as I was mentioning in the last segment, J.B. Rhine, the great ESP researcher, found that ESP results spike in the laboratory based on the enthusiasm of the subject. So that gives you a different perspective on how important your thoughts are. What actually happens to you may be based on your emotions, your enthusiasm, your focus.
And you believe that you can just change your entire life this way, get a better job, maybe find the relationship you're looking for, just about all that stuff.
I do believe that, but here's the key thing, and this is really the magic key, if there is one, behind all of our self-help systems. You must want it with everything in you. You must want it with passionate intensity. And we often tell ourselves that we want things without scrutinizing and examining our convictions. Do we really want it? For example, we say we want a job when what we really want is security. We say we want a new relationship when what we really want maybe is something else, you know, to move to a different city or to have a different domestic arrangement or to somehow rearrange the furniture of our lives. It's very important that we get down to the essentials of what we really want before we put a label on it, because I would contend that what you want over time, you're going to get.
Do people know what they want?
That is really the key thing. We tell ourselves what we want. You know, we say, gee, I want a better job. I want romance. I want to live, you know, in this city versus that city. But my urging to people, and this is something listeners can do right now, is to sit down with a pencil and paper and for a mature, sustained period of time, really write down your deepest desires, your deepest wants. Think about this, dwell on this, be private about this. Don't talk to anybody about it. Be intimate and see if they channel in one direction. Discover what your wants are, because sometimes we repeat things to ourselves by rote and they don't represent our really passionate, heartfelt desires. Get in touch with your desires. You may think you have, but I would contend that few of us actually have.
Mitch, how close do you echo The Secret, that story, or is that different?
It's different in some ways. I have a lot of respect for Rhonda Byrne and The Secret, but I rarely use the term law of attraction because I don't believe we live under one mental super law. I believe that given the circumstances we live under, we experience many different laws and forces, like the law of gravity, as I was saying in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a mistake to think that our minds and our thoughts are the only game in town, so to speak. They are part of the game. They are part of the game, and that's important enough. That's essential enough.
You write about how people travel back into time to help their current life.
Yeah.
But can't that also be dangerous?
Yes, it can, and it's a very interesting prospect. This is why I tell people, be careful of what you're thinking about. Be careful of what you're doing, because, you know, we like to play games with ourselves, and we like to say, gee, you know, if I could travel back into time and give advice to my 15-year-old self, what would I say? Well, my contention is, you may be doing that all the time. That may be happening all the time. Linear time is very likely a very powerful illusion that we use to organize our lives. But what we've discovered in the hard sciences as well as over the course of testimony from centuries is that life is intimate. Everything is happening now. There is an infinitude of events occurring at once, and we select among them. So it could be that we are selecting among events, past, present, future, all the time. And yet these things feel very real to us, very set and concrete to us. But I would contend that when you think about going back and giving advice to a younger self, you may actually be doing that. So be careful. Be careful. We are granted perspective. We are granted some perspective. But use your mind, use your thoughts carefully, because things that you may think of as a novelty may actually be concretely real.
Put it all into Apple stock. That's what I come back and tell myself.
Well, who knows, George? You know, who knows? The guy who owns Apple stock right now, you know, he may have just had that thought based on what you said.
Yeah.
And he's experiencing that as concrete reality, whereas there might have been another reality operative in his life a few minutes ago.
Mitch, what is the 30-day mental challenge?
The 30-day mental challenge is something that I invite everybody to join me in. It's very, very simple. And any Coast listener who emails me, I will send them a little instruction sheet. You basically write out a pledge that for the next 30 days, you are going to dedicate your mind to everything that is productive, progressive, forwarding. You're not going to think of negative events of the past. You're not going to think of unpleasant possibilities of the future. You're going to think that every reasonable ambition is within your grasp. You make up a grid of 30 days. You do this for 30 days. It's your private experiment. Just see what happens. See what happens. It sounds easy, but it's not. It's very difficult. And if you fall off the horse, you don't have to restart the 30 days. You just get back on the horse. The idea is to just try to direct your mind in the direction of that which is positive and productive for 30 days. See what happens. Will you give 30 days to the possibility of experiencing a whole different life? And I will do it with you. I will do it with you. And if you're having a hard time, you can write to me. You can email me and say, you know, I really fell off the wagon last night, and I'm there in the trenches with you.
A couple of years ago, I started the Coast Prayer Club. And what that is, Mitch, is on Fridays, people will visualize a list of people who have written in.
Yes.
Who are on the prayer list for whatever they need, whether it's a new job, an affliction, something. People even write in and say, please pray for my cat. You know, he's sick and stuff like that. Anyways, how powerful do you believe? And I will say, I believe this works because I've gotten the emails back after the fact. And people say, you know, so-and-so's thing was cured and this like that. But how powerful do you believe prayer is?
I really do believe prayer is powerful, and it's for this reason. I don't think Mother Nature plays cruel tricks on us. There are instances and there are times in life where somebody is feeling so depressed and facing such difficulty that they can't do the things that I'm prescribing. They can't direct their minds in a positive way. There are all kinds of methods and techniques I can give them, but let's face it, there are times in life where we feel crushed by circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
That's when prayer comes in. That's when prayer comes in. Prayer is an escape hatch from the difficulties of our own psyche, from the difficulties of life's circumstances. When we can do nothing else, we can pray. And there's no wrong or right way to pray. It's an escape hatch from our own psyches. So again, I don't think we've been put into a cosmic framework that tricks us. I think we've been given a way out when we can't use our minds in the way I'm describing. And there are times where people are suffering from addiction, from depression, from grief, and they can't do the things I'm saying. There are times I can't do the things I'm saying. That's where prayer comes in, and I devote a special section to prayer in the Miracle Club.
Is the one as powerful as the many when you are dealing with miracles?
That's a fascinating question. Now, a lot of people have said that if you get a group of people doing something, it can amp up the energy. And I believe that's true. I absolutely believe that's true. I believe if you get 10 people meditating in a room, powerful things can happen. But to me, no force on earth is more powerful than one emotively charged thought or mental picture. Because with that emotively charged thought or mental picture, you are engaged in an act of selection, and things will change in your life. There may be an interval of time involved. It takes 9 months for a human life to gestate. Be patient. Be patient. But a single emotively held thought, I think, is in some respects the greatest power in the cosmos.
Mitch, explain what an affirmation is.
An affirmation, very simply, is just announcing something that you want to select, announcing a reality that you want to select. And a great time to use an affirmation, it does not need to be spoken out loud. A great time to use an affirmation is those few very relaxed moments just before you drift off to sleep at night. Sleep researchers call that the hypnagogic state. It is a state of time when you can not only reprogram your own psyche through repeating affirmations or prayers or holding visualizations, but psychical researchers have also found that those few moments before you drift to sleep at night are prime time, in essence, for telepathic or extrasensory activity. Mysterious things occur. when people hold affirmations in mind or silently repeat them to themselves in those few moments just before going to sleep at night. That is an exquisitely unusual, supple, suggestible time. It's a time that each of us experiences every day. You also experience it just as you're coming to consciousness in the morning. Use that time. That is the prime time for silently reciting affirmations to yourself.
It seems to work, doesn't it?
That's been my experience, George. When people ask me for a simple step to take, that is always the step I give them. Again, my mantra is never neglect simple things. We have a habit of overlooking simple things. Use them. There's more depth there than one might expect.
What are some of the positive mind control methods we should use?
Well, one of the things that's most important is writing things down. Write down your goals. And I don't mean on a computer. I mean get out an old-fashioned pencil and paper and do it. Because once you do that, you've actually created a physical manifestation, so to speak, of the thing that you're looking for. The actual tactile act of writing something, I think, not only helps persuade you mentally and in terms of your neural pathways of the goal that you're moving towards, but you've actually done something empowering. You've done something real. If you sit down and for a sustained period of time, make a list of things that you truly want in life, and you know these are things you want with all your heart. They're not diversionary, but they're essential life goals. Take that list, put it onto some sort of a laminated card or something that you can carry with you. Look at it morning, noon, and night. Think about it as much as possible. And when things on that list come to you, and over time they will come to you, and they may come to you quicker than you think, just express gratitude. And most important of all, don't tell anyone what you're doing. Remain silent. Because sometimes you share these things with other people, and they'll roll their eyes, or they'll say it's nonsense, and they knock you off your resolve. Remain silent. Make your list. Carry it with you. Review it 3 times a day. Memorize it. And when the results arrive, express thanks. That's a method we can all do.
And it's easy, isn't it, once you get into it?
It is easy. The important thing is to do it with consistency, is to do it with silence, and is to do it with total stark honesty. Arriving at a definite aim in life, or a small number of things that coalesce around one aim, has enormous power. An aim is really another way of saying focus. And we know that when you focus the sun's rays with a magnifying glass or a prism, they become enormously powerful. What is a laser other than focused light? Natural laws are consistent. Your mind is powerful when it is focused, which is why I keep emphasizing the idea that you have to really nail down what you want in a very concrete way and be very honest with yourself. That's where focus comes from.
Mitch, since you've been doing this, have you used these techniques for yourself?
Every day. Every single day, George. And I must tell you, my life has gone in directions that I never could have expected. I've done television and narrating and written many books and articles, including in places that are not known for their occult enthusiasms. I've written about these topics in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. I never dreamt that was possible. And so I feel like I'm an example of the effectiveness of these methods. And everything that I offer to the Coast family are things that I've road tested myself. I would never ask somebody to do something that I hadn't experimented with myself.
Well, you could tell you love doing what you're doing.
I really do. I really do. I mean, you know, it's a dream come true in the most literal sense. You know, 15 years ago, this is exactly what I pictured myself doing and exactly what I wanted to do. Be patient. Sometimes things happen quickly, but sometimes a gestation period is also necessary.
It is amazing work. How do people get this membership into the Miracle Club?
The Miracle Club. I used to say that anybody can join the Miracle Club. You didn't have to sign your name up anywhere. There was no magic decoder ring and anything. And of course, that's true. Everybody who's listening is automatically a member of the Miracle Club. But I got to thinking, you know, speaking of magic decoder rings, maybe it would be fun if people had a little membership card. So I asked a friend of mine, a great artist named Tim Botta, to draw up a membership card in the Miracle Club. And anybody who emails me, and I'm super easy to find, throw my name into Google, it'll take you to my website and my email. Email me and I will send you your own membership card to be in the Miracle Club. You can sign it, you can fold it, laminate it, carry it in your wallet. It's just something fun to have with you to sort of keep you on course throughout the day to keep your thoughts steady and productive. So I thought it would be fun for people to have an official card designating their membership in the Miracle Club. So send me an email, you get a Miracle Club membership card.
We're going to take calls next hour with Mitch Horowitz, and of course we will take your miracle stories as well. I would guess, Mitch, it's surprising how many people have miracle stories.
It is
overwhelming, almost.
You know, we have to understand that life is made up of joys and sometimes great tragedies. But in as much as we do experience catastrophes in life, and let's face it, that's a part of life, we also experience extraordinary, absurdly unexpected moments of good news. There are, in fact, times, George, where we get just what we're looking for. And I would say that's more than just the turn of the roulette wheel. Our minds play a role in that. Again, a miracle is a departure from all expected and all reasonable circumstances.
Absolutely. Mitch, we'll come back with calls next on Coast to Coast AM.